science advisor for the Environmental Health Investigations Branch at the California Department of Public Health, and he's worked in environmental epidemiology for over 15 years for the state of California. He co-chairs the State Environmental Health Indicator Collaborative for Climate Change, and he's recently worked on studies of population vulnerability and effects of morbidity of heat waves in California. So he'll give us a bit more of a local perspective. Paul.
Thanks, Alan. Well, I think it's only fitting that we're having this discussion here in California, where, of course, you know, we've taken the lead with AB 32 on the mitigation issue on climate change. But we haven't taken the leadership on the issue of human health impacts of climate change, either here or in this country. And, you know, when you look about what's happening in other countries, you know, you have Health Canada and Australia having very large climate change programs, climate change and human health programs already. And what do we have? Howie, like one position at CDC really dedicated to this right now. So, you know, we're really behind the curve on that. So I was glad to be able to have the opportunity today to talk about, from the perspective of the state of California, what are some of the needs and challenges. So, you know, you've seen these types of impacts, and I won't go over these, but just to mention maybe a few that are specific to California that we're worried about. One is the early snowmelt issue impacting water quality and availability in California. Wildfires, we now have, you know, used to be just like the end of the summer was our wildfire season. Now it's a constant wildfire season from, you know, we're seeing changes already in wildfires from the beginning of the summer to the end of the summer. And then the other issue I would mention is, you know, California is the largest producer of pesticides, user of pesticides in the country. And, you know, there's these negative feedback loops. You know, we're going to be, you know, let's say there's a dengue outbreak in San Diego. We're going to be starting to use a lot more vector control use. So the pesticides issue, I think, should be on our table as something we're going to be worried about in the future. So on the needs and challenges I just had, I'm going to go through these fairly quickly because I know we're all anxious to get to the discussion part. So five areas, research, vulnerability analyses, surveillance needs, environmental justice, mitigation, and adaptation. Some of these issues have already been mentioned. We haven't, you know, I think the air pollution and pollen impacts haven't been mentioned yet today, and that's going to be huge. I think the built environment land use changes. We've also had a real seminal legislation, SB 375, to reduce sprawl and linking greenhouse gas emission levels with growth in California. That's another landmark legislation. And that will have changes also on vector and disease reservoirs. The issues of the effects of agriculture, crop yield, fisheries and nutrition, this is another big issue. This was work we published recently, Environmental Health Perspectives. This is what you're seeing here is data from the 2006 heat wave in California. And we're all aware of the mortality impacts, but what about the morbidity impacts? Well, what you're seeing here on the, and it's kind of hard to see this, I guess, but what we did was look at hospitalization and emergency room visits for heat during the heat wave. And what we actually found, and this slide on the right shows you the, you know, the high temperature areas in the state in the red. But what we actually found on the left is the rate ratios. But if you could see the Central Coast area, which includes the San Francisco Bay Area, we found rate ratios of 23 during the heat wave period compared to the non-heat wave period. So really we suffered the most excess morbidity in the cooler areas of California where, you know, we have lack of air conditioning, we're not adapted to heat conditions. So this is the type of work. This is what we did with the Natural Resources Defense Council and Kim Knowlton. Vulnerability analysis. What are the differential population vulnerabilities then for both heat morbidity and mortality? What are some of the population risk factors for flooding, drought, air pollution effects? How do we identify populations with comorbidities that are at risk? This is just one attempt. There's been a number of attempts. I know George Luber at CDC has been doing a lot of interesting work with looking at heat islands with satellite imagery, trying to couple these population vulnerabilities. Here is just a picture of possible vulnerable populations in Alameda County, California. What I realized when I looked at this, because then I then geocoded some ambulance 911 visits for heat onto this, they didn't hit the vulnerable areas because all our poor people live in the cooler the cooler areas of the county, and actually the ambulance visits happen in the more warmer parts of the county. So you really need to overlay, intersect an exposure surface with these vulnerability analyses. Mitigation needs. We talked a little bit already about, you know, mostly public health has been saying, you know, we only can deal with adaptation. We really, you know, public health doesn't have a role in mitigation, but as we're hearing today, you know, we do have these other issues with local agricultural use, renewable energies, changing transportation use, energy efficiencies. These will all help the mitigation area. Environmental justice. This is a big issue here in California as we're in this debate about the effects of cap and trade versus carbon taxes on disproportionate impacts on population. So this issue has to stay alive. Surveillance needs. We need more rapid availability of morbidity and mortality data. I'd have to take, you know, one issue with Chris and the EPA report. I think that, you know, over the last decade or more, we've actually seen a weakening of the public health infrastructure and public health workforce, and that's going to be vital if we're going to deal with the climate change and human health impact issue. We're going to have to strengthen the public health infrastructure and workforce in this country. And I also mentioned development and validation of climate change environmental health indicators, and do a plug for a 12:30 talk I'll be giving on that in more detail on our climate change and environmental health session. Adaptation issues, we do, our resources agency in California is starting an adaptation strategy. We're having 6 working groups, and one is on public health. When we had our original climate action team, they forgot to put public health in it, but now we're going to have it in the adaptation strategy at least. Preparedness issues, public health education is key, for example, in educating social contacts of vulnerable populations. I've mentioned the pesticide issue, and I'll just leave you with this. You know, this is a scenario for sea level rise at the San Francisco International Airport for the year, I think this was, I don't have the year on here, maybe 2020? Well, this was an impact. I don't know when they're thinking of the impact of 1 meter sea rise. Maybe somebody else knows. It was 2050.
It could be 50.
Yeah, 2050. But, you know, the issue is not just on infrastructure. I mean, we've had some, we had a great talk in the environment section on, you know, poor communities in the port areas of Texas. And these are the same types of communities that are going to be impacted. It's not just, you know, protecting the financial district of San Francisco, but there's an environmental justice issue involved with this also. So just leave it with that. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Paul. So can I ask the panelists if you'd like to come sit at the front table up here? There are a set of discussion questions, and they're really just